Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. The tribal casino industry is taking a big hit this year because of the pandemic. While some casinos are still closed, others have reopened with safety precautions, like dividers between machines and new ventilation systems. In addition, some casinos are opening up their doors for COVID-19 testing to help with the pandemic. Today, we'll hear from experts about how tribal gaming is doing during these times. We go live right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. U.S. top infectious disease expert Dr. Anthony Fauci discussed COVID-19 research, clinical trials, and vaccines within American Indian and Alaska Native communities during a virtual National Institutes of Health event Tuesday. Fauci says vaccines are the safest intervention to stop infectious diseases.
As soon as a vaccine becomes available to you and the tribal nations, you should very seriously consider getting vaccinated. It is an extraordinarily effective form of prevention of this particular disease and other diseases for which we've been very successful with vaccines.
Fauci addressed concerns about vaccine trials in Native American populations and mistrust of the federal government.
We want to make sure that tribal nations are represented in the clinical trials, because when the trials are shown to be safe and effective, we want to be able to tell the people of the tribal nation that we have now proven that the vaccine is safe and effective in you and in your people, so that you can feel comfortable in taking it. If you don't get involved in the clinical trial, you will not feel comfortable that what we're giving you has been proven in a scientific way to be safe and effective.
As COVID-19 vaccines begin to reach tribal communities, Fauci says people should continue to practice public safety guidelines. The Navajo Nation, which has been hit hard by COVID-19, seeing a spike in cases with uncontrolled spread in 77 communities, has now started to vaccinate healthcare workers. Roland Begay was among the first at the Chinle, Arizona healthcare facility to receive a vaccine this week. He spoke during a virtual town hall Tuesday, saying, "Getting the vaccine is a personal choice and the next step to take in the pandemic."
We make choices every day, regardless, and then modifying our behaviors. That's what came to mind. You know, taking care of yourself, just because, you know, this vaccine is here, you know, don't mean that we stop or put our masks away.
The Chinle facility was among Navajo Area Indian Health Service units to receive vaccines. The Navajo Area IHS was allocated 3,900 Pfizer vaccines for facilities in Arizona and New Mexico. Utah Navajo Health Systems are working with the state. As of Tuesday, the total number of positive cases for the Navajo Nation reached more than 19,900. Pressure continues across Indian country for the Biden-Harris transition team to name New Mexico Congresswoman Deb Haaland Secretary of the Department of the Interior as President-elect Joe Biden announces picks for his cabinet. Tribal leaders, directors of Native organizations, and even Hollywood stars are urging Biden to choose Haaland to lead the agency as an Indigenous person. New Mexico U.S. Senator Tom Udall is said to be a top contender. In a press call Tuesday, the retiring senator was tight-lipped about any conversations he's had with the transition team. Here's what he had to say when asked what his message would be to Indian country if named to lead the Interior Department.
The tribal leaders, they've known me for my entire elected career and even before that. And I'm just very encouraged by how many of them are speaking up and telling the Biden transition who would be a good Interior Secretary. I'm just very encouraged. And these are my friends, and I've worked with them a long time, and I'm very, very close to New Mexico's 23 tribes and those tribal leaders.
Udall says right now he's continuing to advocate and fight for tribes, including for resources for COVID-19 as he finishes his service in the U.S. Senate. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Now, National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shifwikdui via Skype. The tribal casino industry has deeply been impacted by the pandemic. Interaction at table games, restaurant buffets, and other activities at casinos are among the things the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says increases the risk of contracting COVID-19. This spring, many tribal casinos closed down for the safety of their patrons and the employees. The American Gaming Association estimates the gaming industry as a whole will lose 78% in revenue just for the second quarter of 2020. Tribes are also struggling economically because of the loss. At the same time, some are transforming casino spaces into places to help their community. Some are hosting COVID-19 testing sites. Others are providing a place to stay for individuals who are impacted by the virus. What's your tribe's casino pandemic story? Is it open right now? Are you a casino or resort employee who is feeling the impact of the closure? And what concerns do you have about tribal gaming and the pandemic? Phone lines are open. The number to join us is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now from Washington, D.C. is Jason Giles. He is the executive director of the National Indian Gaming Association, and Jason is Muscogee Creek. Jason, thanks for joining us for another Native America Calling.
Great, thank you, and great to be on again. I really enjoy all your coverage and reporting through this pandemic. It's been extremely invaluable for Indian country.
Well, I appreciate that. And Jason, let's give them a view into what is going on in the casino industry. What are you hearing from tribes about their casinos and what they're doing during the pandemic?
Well, it started off very early. And if you recall, in Washington State, Seattle area was one of the first areas to really experience this. And to Governor Inslee's credit, rather than treat tribes by dictate or order them to shut down, he reached out to them, government-to-government relationship, and asked the tribal leaders to support what the surrounding area of Seattle was doing in terms of controlling what at that point was an unknown virus. We didn't know how fast it spread or how deadly it was. And the tribes, Puyallup, Tulalip, I know I'm going to leave some out around there, they all bonded together and said, we need to help the city and state here. And they were really the first ones to deal with this. And, you know, they reduced the amount of people, they limited large gatherings, and they really tried to comply with the CDC and the Washington Health Department. And remember, tribal governments are sovereign, and state jurisdiction, local county jurisdiction, it doesn't apply to them. Tribes do what's best for their tribal citizens and on their reservations. And Governor Inslee and his administration let them make those decisions, what was best for their tribal citizens, and they worked hand in hand.
And so do you have an estimate on how much revenue was lost because of the pandemic?
Well, and then that's the nature of this pandemic. It started out west a little bit, but then, of course, when it hit New York City, that's when it really took off. So tribal casinos throughout the country experienced this at different times of the year in 2020. So what was happening on the coast didn't really hit the middle of the country till the summer and the Southwest. So initially, the numbers weren't bad, but through the summer, we had some projections of we can expect 20% less revenues this year in 2020 for Indian gaming. And again, these are just guesstimates because some places shut down for a couple weeks and then started up again. One other factor to consider is a lot of when you shut down your buffets and all the entertainment and restaurant and food and hotel aspects, the gambling floors were still open. Well, now the casino's overhead went way down when you don't have those back-end workers and you don't have a lot of the entertainment stuff. You just have the straight gambling dollars being transacted there. So some of the net revenues might actually increase, but overall as an industry, we're looking at $34.5 billion was reported in 2019. We're looking well under $30 billion for 2020.
And how does that sit with you?
You know, the only thing we can say is it could have been a lot worse, and unfortunately, it could still get worse. Look what's happening right now in New Mexico on your report right before our segment. The same thing is playing out in Arizona. California is especially hard hit right now. And so we don't know how long into 2021 this is going to last. And we know the vaccine is coming. We also know that tribes are mostly rural and are going to have a harder time getting this vaccine than other folks. And the second thing is the messaging is going to be important. I'm glad some of the tribal leaders are going to step up and get the vaccine. But, you know, in D.C., we have doctor friends. We work with NIHB. We don't hear enough about why they might think American Indians, African Americans would be skeptical of taking a virus, and that history is long and sordid, but most people don't know about it. You know, they hear stories of when the British and the smallpox blanket, you know, that's always sort of been a legend or a wives' tale for a lot of historians, but those were tribal stories passed down through generations, and those have meaning. And ultimately, you know, you can just talk to the Hualapai tribe in Arizona about what happened with their DNA in Arizona State. You know, these horror stories out there explain a lot. And I think if the medical community approached it with at least just knowing the history there, they would get a better vaccine response.
Yeah, there is a lot of talk of all of that going on right now. And that also ties to casinos in a different way, too. I know some of these places have found a different purpose during the pandemic. Tell me a little bit about some of those efforts. I know one here in New Mexico has also opened their doors in their resort area, their hotel, to those who are being challenged by COVID-19. Tell me more of what tribes are doing, maybe changing their role, or casinos are doing.
Mm-hmm. One of the great reasons we're so proud of our tribal gaming industry is they have always and consistently shifted gears when needed, whether it was flooding, wildfires, earthquakes in California. The tribal casinos opened themselves up as shelters. Certainly, we're seeing the same thing now with the pandemic. We know that in a lot of rural areas, some of these casinos are the gathering place. So they've used parking lots for testing centers. And you would think that they can easily facilitate the vaccine distribution at some of these casinos, given the amount of refrigeration they have and the amount of space they have. That's really what you need is space. So we're getting reports, you know, certain casinos in Oklahoma are helping out and in other areas, particularly in New Mexico right now is the best examples. But I'm sure in Washington State and California, they're going to be ramping up to help the local communities get this vaccine. And again, this is just a great indication of how tribal governments and tribal leaders have been working with state and local folks, because frankly, a lot of times the federal government has been absent during this pandemic, and nobody works closer than tribal governments with the federal government So they've seen firsthand a lot of the shortfalls that have happened, but they're going to be there to pick up the pieces and hopefully get this vaccine out there and help folks recover from this.
And Jason, making that decision to stay open or making that decision it's time to close, I know is a heavy one. Can you talk to me a little bit about what you understand of when tribes make that decision to close it down and when to open up? We've got a couple of minutes for a break. Go ahead.
Yes. The best examples, some of them were in Arizona because they were impacted during the summer, which is typically people are out more. And we had some reports that it would cost anywhere from $150,000 to $300,000 to shut down and start up again. And you have to remember, at a casino, a lot of people have security clearances. So it's not that easy to furlough people and expect them to come right back or to hire for their position. There's background checks involved. So tribes have had to really tread slowly in terms of making that decision of when to shut down. In some places like New Mexico, it's been a little bit easier because their governor has taken this virus serious from the beginning. But if you're in a state like Arizona, I hate to keep using them, where their governor was not responsive and still to this day I don't think takes it as seriously as some of the other governors, that is a big decision for tribal leaders to make on their own. And again, it comes down to that sovereignty and tribal government control and doing what's best for them.
And, you know, I'm glad you did say that, because a lot of this is from decisions that our tribal leadership is making, the full tribal leadership, the person who we know leading up our tribes, as well as the councils. And there's a lot that goes into that, whether to stay open or to close. And we're wondering how things are in your own tribal community. What is your casino's pandemic story? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And of course, if you are also an employee of one of these places, we know that the casinos are also attached to different types of resorts, entertainment, golf centers. If you have any thoughts on how all of this has impacted you as an employee, we want to hear from you too. 1-800-996-2848. Coming up after the break, we'll check in with those who have seen this impact up close. We'll take you to California and other places, but we want you to join us too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you have questions, go ahead and dial in now. Don't wait till the end. We're ready for you.
December 26th will be the 158th anniversary of the executions of 38 Dakota warriors in Mankato, Minnesota. It's the largest mass hanging sanctioned by the U.S. government. Descendants and other tribal members remember the Dakota 38 each year. We'll explore the legacy of the Dakota 38 on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And before we get back to our conversation about tribal gaming, it's time to recognize one station in Hoopa, California. It's their special day, KIDE. 40 years ago today, they started broadcasting from the Hoopa homelands. And I'm told they launched their broadcast during this very time slot. This is a true celebration. Congrats to all those who made that initial launch happen, as well as those that have either stepped to the microphone or even helped behind the scenes. Big ups. Here is to another 40 plus years. And thanks to you too for tuning in. If you'd like to join our conversation on tribal gaming during the pandemic, the number to get in is 1-800-996-2848. With us today out of the National Indian Gaming Association is Jason Giles, and he joins us today out of Washington, D.C. Also here, too, out of Flagstaff, Arizona, is Brian Parrish. He is the interim CEO for the Navajo Nation Gaming Enterprise. My pleasure to also have him here. Brian, welcome to Native America Calling.
Ms. Monica, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Hey, Brian, you're talking to Tara. It's our pleasure to have you here. And when we think of what is going on in our different nations, there's a lot of decisions that need to be made. And I understand that the Navajo Nation casinos are still closed. Tell us a little bit about where this stands and how things got to this point.
Ms. Tara, absolutely. And again, thank you so much for inviting us to be on the show. Navajo Nation is it's a very unique situation that we find ourselves in. For those listeners that aren't familiar with Navajo, the nation is 27,000 square miles. It's about the size of West Virginia. And there's 360,000 plus enrolled members. So even though it's a very rural Native American nation, there's a large number of the population that live on the nation, but also off. And so one of the biggest challenges for the nation, of course, is building expensive utility infrastructure. And so that always is a challenge, and there's ongoing projects that are constantly being done by leadership and our sister enterprises to provide those essential services to membership. In this case, with the pandemic, Navajo has been hit especially hard. Our casinos are located on the periphery of the nation, and we have four properties, and we just opened a new travel plaza that has a small gaming parlor in it. But all of our businesses have been shut down for 9 months now, dating back to March 17th. We're very proud of Navajo Nation leadership because they stood up right from the outset, and they said, hey, we're here to protect our Navajo membership, their families, our employees, our patrons. They got with our board, and they asked us to go ahead and shut down. And so our board voluntarily did. We followed all the executive and public health orders that have been issued by the Office of the President and the Navajo Nation ever since March 17th. And unfortunately, the conditions have not improved to a level yet that we can reopen. So, Ms. Tara, we're still closed 9 months later.
And so, Brian, do you have an estimate on just how much the tribe has lost as a result of their casinos being closed? And by the way, how many casinos are there?
We have five properties. And, the hard part for us was that we had our best year ever in 2019. I think the industry did very well, as Mr. Giles was speaking to. And we came out of January and February well ahead of our prior year. And so we were excited about the prospects for 2020. But then, of course, the pandemic just gained its foothold. So we've had to burn up significant millions and millions of dollars in our own cash reserves from the enterprise just to be able to remain closed. During this 9 months, we made the decision, our board and leadership, to keep our team members on administrative leave with pay for seven of the 9 months of the closure period. And this is very important because we wanted our team members to be able to stay home. Approximately 83% of our team members are enrolled members of the Navajo Nation. We have a workforce of about 1,180. And so what we wanted to be careful of was, because our casinos are on the periphery of the Navajo Nation, about 65% of our business comes from outside Navajo. And so our concern is that our team members would be at a central gathering place with patrons that may not be, benefiting from the same level of safety protocols and things as Navajo is deployed. So it increased the chance of the spread of the virus. And so then when our team members would leave work and go home, we have team members from 105 of the 110 chapters or communities across the Navajo Nation. So as you can see, it would be easy for us to be a catalyst of a wave of virus contractions and cases across the nation. So we've been very mindful of that, and we have stayed closed during this period. And again, the nation and our board made the decision, hey, priority one is safety of our people. We're going to demonstrate that with the decisions we're making about keeping the business closed and covering people's payroll so they can stay home and have their benefits and be with their families.
And Brian, I know that what happens at the casino also fans out to other places, even local economies. And can you tell me a little bit on how things are, how much impact all of this has had also on local economies beyond what's happening right there in the tribal nation?
Ms. Tara, absolutely. We had an independent economic study done of our enterprise, and folks that aren't familiar with Navajo, the Navajo Nation didn't decriminalize gaming until 2006 and opened its first casino in 2008. So we're only 12 years old. Many, as we know, casinos got in, or tribes got into the gaming business back in the late 80s after President Reagan signed the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act. But we had an economic output study done of our enterprise, and for our first 10 years of our operations, we generated $1.5 billion in economic output. And that's not only due to all the monies that we're drawing in, but the monies that we're paying out, the businesses, the partnerships, construction, just the economic churning of money. And then, of course, the majority of our team members are Navajo, so they often go outside the nation to the local communities to spend money, buy cars, clothes, grocery shop, things like that. And so the local communities we're hearing have had a huge impact where, you know, they've been hurt by, you know, our business being closed. Fortunately, our team members have been able to continue to purchase, you know, their essential items and things like that. But we've lost the spend coming from, you know, our patrons. And so that's had a very dramatic impact on the border towns.
And maybe that's where you fit into this conversation. You want to add some thoughts? Go ahead and dial now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We are talking about tribal gaming, and we are learning about the impacts that have come to these different gaming industries and their different properties. If you want to share some thoughts on all of this, 1-800-996-2848. And maybe you're somebody who used to frequent the casino, and now things are different. You can share your thoughts too. Where are my bingo players? 1-800-996-2848. Well, Brian, thank you for that view. Also here, too, out of Ronart Park, California, is Greg Saris, and he is the chairman of the Federated Indians of the Greaton Rancheria, and he is Southern Pomo and Coast Miwok. Our pleasure to have him here. Welcome, Chairman Saris.
Thank you for having me, Tara. Good morning.
And Chairman Saris, when we, you know, took a look at this early on in the year and looked at that decision, whether a casino was going to close or not, what it meant, what it would mean to the community, that was one view. And now here we are months later. And what is the report? How have things changed since casino closures and that thought of reopening? Tell me more, Chairman.
Well, thank you. I think, Tara, Jason, encapsulated so much of what's happening. And, of course, it's very different in different areas. But here in California, with our tribe, we in middle of March, we decided to close. We were working very closely with the governor and with his recommendations. And at that time, most of the casinos in California here did close at the same time. Then, you know, things went on and things looked a little better. In the middle of June, we decided to reopen on a limited basis. We worked very carefully with the local health officer, and then we took extreme measures, health measures that exceeded CDC guidelines, everything from the thermal machines to all the surveillance and so on and so forth, to open plexiglass, and we opened on a limited basis. We closed our bars so that the bars were not open. We limited the hotel, and again, we were very careful. I mean, we've gone to the extreme now of testing. We have over 2,000 team members, and we're testing them every 2 weeks with rapid turnaround in order to keep the facility open. We were closed for 3 months, and it was very difficult. All of our team members get the Kaiser Gold Cadillac plan, whereby they pay nothing out of their paychecks for full coverage for them and their families. And, of course, that's an expensive premium. We managed to keep them on those health plans throughout the time that they were furloughed, the hourly people. And the salaried people, we kept we kept on. So it was a strain. And once we're back open, we were doing pretty well. As Jason mentioned, you had a better net because a lot of your overhead is closed. I mean, our ballrooms, all the shows and so forth that we had, we could no longer do, obviously. It's been somewhat difficult. The important thing is that we've worked very carefully with the Sonoma County, the local health officer. We had her come in and see our facility, see what we had going, and she was very happy with what we're doing and maintained a very good relationship with her. In addition, we have offered to, again, to Jason's point about helping the community, not only did we feed first responders and open our hotel during the enormous fires that were here, but now we have committed monies to help the county deliver and vaccinate all people in Sonoma County as it's happening. We're going to open up our ballroom, offer our large ballroom as a locale where vaccinations can take place. If the county wants to do that, we'll help in whatever way we can to keep doing that. So I think the important thing here is to work closely with the county. And as I said, we are exceeding the CDC health guidelines, fortunately, we are able to afford to be able to do that. And I think if the federal government let other businesses or help them do that, they could also be safe. We've been proof that if you have these guidelines in place and you're opened on a limited basis, limited capacity, you can operate a rather large-scale operation with good results in terms of health. So far, so good. Yes, our income has, I think the person from Navajo was saying that, we too were looking in January and February. It looked like we were going to have a great 2020. Obviously, it's somewhat compromised. But we are just happy that we're able to keep all our tribal programs going, keep our tribal people fed, and keep all of our team members in health insurance and jobs. So we're just fortunate that way. But again, the expense to have all the health measures in place is significant. Imagine, testing over 2,000 people every 2 weeks.
And, Chairman, do you have any numbers on that, of just exactly how much it is or ballpark to really, paint that picture even clearer?
I don't know the exact point. It's in the millions and millions of dollars, I'll say that. I mean, just for the purchase of the thermal machines at our entrances, I think those were like $250,000 or $300,000 a pop. And, we have 8 entrances to cover, and those machines take your temperature and so forth. And then, we have to have the added surveillance, the added security. We had to also employ a whole new department called our safety ambassadors. So we have, in addition to our regular security, we've employed a whole team of safety ambassadors, where we have at any time 3, depending on the time of day, 3 to 10 of those people on the floor. With their job is nothing to do but walk around and make sure that everybody has their mask up over their nose, that they're not within 6 feet of another person, that if they're drinking coffee or anything, they must be sitting down, and they can only take off their mask to take a sip. I mean, we are a bit of a Gestapo. The place may not be as much fun, but you can still press a button or throw a card. So, and people seem to be okay with that. Those who are not, we have had trouble with people who feel that this is America and they can do what they want. And we quickly tell them that, no, you're in a sovereign nation and you have to do what we want. And if you don't like it, you'll be trespassed. You have to be strict. you have to do the best you can in order to stay open, in order to stay safe. That's just all there is to it.
Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of this, too, really opens up that conversation on sovereignty and tribes deciding to, you know, keep some of these places open, deciding to close them down. Sometimes that doesn't line up with what the state is doing. And Chairman Saris, I heard you say several times that you're going above and beyond the minimum requirements or what's being suggested. And what fuels that? You got it less than a minute. Go ahead. Any thoughts on it?
We wanted to be responsible in our community, given the virus, given what's happening. We wanted to be cooperative with the CDC guidelines and with the concerns that the governor has and with our local health official. We have to work with everybody to do the best we can in order to stay open.
All right. Thank you for that. And you are hearing from Chairman Greg Saris from the Greaton Rancheria, hearing a little bit about their decisions on their gaming industry and the impacts too. What about in your own nation? Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And again, this invitation is to any casino employees, resort employees as well. How has this impacted you? Are you pretty happy with what your casino did to keep you employed or to keep benefits coming during the pandemic? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We want to hear your story. Go ahead and dial in now. We'll keep the phone lines open, but we do want to hear from you. Now is the time to dial in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. More Native America Calling coming up right after this.
If you're a Native American entrepreneur looking to expand or start up a business, you should know about the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program, a federal program encouraging private lenders to make the business loan you need. The Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can support you. Information available by emailing dci@bia.gov. That's dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
Thanks for spending your day with us here on Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we are talking about casinos, tribal gaming, employees, revenue, as well as the impacts of the pandemic on these different industries. If you have any thoughts, go ahead and call right now, 1-800-996-2848. And right now, I want to take us to Minneapolis, Minnesota. We have James, or Jim Claus, with us. He is the founder and principal of Claus Robinson QED Incorporated. Our pleasure to have him here. Jim, welcome to Native America Calling.
Thank you very much, and thank you for the opportunity. I certainly have enjoyed listening thus far to the other leaders across the country, and I want to commend you on dealing with such a difficult and such an important topic for Indian country and for the health of the Native population and the health of the tribal governments.
And Jim, I understand that you take close looks into the gaming industry. And what are some of the things you'd like to share about what you've witnessed, revenue losses, the ability to shift during a pandemic, and maybe even finding new aspects or new ways to use casinos? What are some of the things that you'd like to point out?
Sure. So we work with tribes throughout the U.S. and Canada, and have been doing that for pretty much since IGRA, so over 30 years now. And so when this started, one of the ways that we decided we could be helpful to our clients and to the industry was to take a look at what we expected the economic impacts to be of the pandemic and of the mitigation efforts, the closures and other things that have to be done, and also to look forward and see what was likely to happen over the next couple of years, how long the recovery would take, et cetera. And so we produced a report back in June called Healing Tribal Economies, and then we did a supplemental update of that in October. Just looking at, obviously, even in that period of time, significant new information was available. Very possibly we'll be doing another one like that sometime in January. And just trying to provide some some facts and some guidance and some projections as to what would happen. Most of what we have seen or what we anticipated has already been discussed today. In many cases, Jason was talking about the impacts on gaming revenue and on other revenue at casinos. And our analysis suggests that it's going to be actually about a 30% hit on gaming revenue this year and almost a 40% hit on revenue from the other parts of the casinos, the hotels, the restaurants, the entertainment, the rest of that. So it's a pretty severe drop. We're looking at gaming revenue dropping as low as right around $24 billion for this year compared to the $34.6 billion last year. So it's a pretty brutal situation. I mean, we still have roughly 10% of the casinos, Indian casinos in the country, are closed. Many that have reopened, every one of them closed at one point. And the average closure was roughly 75 days, but there are several that have reopened and then had to reclose again. And one of the things that you see is, and you heard this from Brian, you heard this from Chairman, the tribes have taken this very seriously. In fact, if anything, far more seriously than non-tribal businesses and non-tribal governments. And so they've been very careful and very cautious, and they've done an excellent job of protecting their people, their staff and their members and their customers, for the most part, in their operations with their mitigation efforts. But the local communities and spread within the surrounding communities have not been as effective. There's been more trouble with that. And so several of the Indian casinos in the country that have had to reclose for periods of time have had to reclose because staff people or customers, but mostly staff, are picking up the virus outside of the casino environment. They're not getting it from work. They're getting it at home or elsewhere, and then they're bringing it into work, and there's enough of that that they then have to reclose. So, you know, that continues to exacerbate the problem. The good news, however, is that, as both Jason and the chairman alluded to, there are some savings, even though there are significant additional costs associated with the cleaning and other steps that have to be taken. There have been some savings because of the way the operations are running. And people, customers, have shown a great interest in continuing to participate in casinos, to visit casinos whenever it's possible for them. And they're spending, you're not seeing as many visitors, you can't have as many visitors, but they're spending more while they're there, and because they're missing out, and there just aren't a lot of options for things to do. So the prospects for recovery next year and the year after are very good, and we do expect that by mid to late 2022, we'll be back on track to roughly where we were last year. We would expect that from that point forward, we would see new growth.
And so what is your advice to tribes who are having to deal with all this?
Yeah, it's hard to go through the crisis stage. The good news is that we're coming out of the sort of the initial phase of this, which was the emergency phase, the scrambling to come up with ideas, the quick changes, the ad hoc changes to deal with it, and we're kind of moving into a transitional period here, which we expect to last really up through the fall of next year, where even though we're not done with this yet and even though we're scrambling, we have a better sense of how to handle it, when to close, when not to close, what works and what doesn't from a customer standpoint, from an employee standpoint, from a health standpoint, in terms of steps to mitigate transmission of the virus. So we're getting adjusted to it. We do expect by next fall that we'll move into the more permanent recovery phase, that the crisis period of the virus will have passed by that time. It is going to take time to recover. We won't recover overnight because there are changes to how we do things that are going to stay even afterwards. And there are lingering effects from so many people having so much trouble with jobs and housing and other economic factors. So it is going to take a little longer than that. But, you know, the advice that we've been offering to tribes is to do exactly what they've been doing. I mean, to hunker down, take it seriously, take the steps necessary, plan carefully, and then plan for a future that's coming, that's going to be a positive one, that's going to involve new growth and new ways of doing things. The reallocation of space that you heard discussed is definitely something that we expect to see going forward. We also expect to see an even heavier emphasis on high-end, high-value customers, those that participate more often and more actively in gaming, making sure that they are comfortable, that they feel safe, that they are catered to. And those are some of the steps that we think are going to help tribes deal with not just the crisis now, but the recovery process in the future.
Well, thank you for that. Jim Kloss here with us today. Also on the line, too, out of Washington, D.C., is Jason Giles. He is the executive director of the National Indian Gaming Association. And, Jason, I did want to ask, a lot of times when we see casinos in the headlines, a lot of times it's wrestling with the state and seeing that things have really shifted greatly in the gaming industry. Is there anything you can report of how things are impacted with state relations? And we know a lot of times there's taxes to be paid. Has anything shifted or anything you want to talk about this element within what happens in tribal gaming, dealing with the state? Anything to report? Jason?
Yes, certainly, Tara. One of the things, I wouldn't call it so much a shifting right now. One of the things the pandemic did was sort of freeze everything in place. So the issues that were plaguing the tribes in Oklahoma vis-a-vis their governor's aggressive actions there, those are still going to have to be wrestled with. The sports betting issue and the new forms of gambling, online gambling, that is sort of taking off in states that do not have tribes. They've been authorizing sports betting. This past election, we saw a number of new states authorize sports betting. Here in D.C., you can literally sports bet at the professional games, whether it's basketball, soccer, or baseball. They have sports books attached to the venues now. So these issues are going to be cropping up, as James said, as we get back to some semblance of normal. There's all these new forms of gambling. There's issues between the governors and the tribes that are left unresolved. In California, they have a sports betting initiative that they need to get on the ballot because they need to change our constitution in order to authorize sports betting. So these things are going to come right to the fore as soon as we get back to some semblance of normal. And that's a good thing because I think tribes are now in a stronger position. One of the governor's main arguments in Oklahoma was, again, that tribes aren't paying their fair share. Well, look what they've done while during the pandemic, and look how they've held up. Meanwhile, the oil and gas industry is going under. So, the tribes are going to be in a strong position. I think tribal casinos are going to be in a stronger position. I will say the one thing that keeps folks up at night, like Brian Parrish at Navajo Nation, we wonder if the consumer spending habits are going to be inalterably changed. In other words, have they gotten so used to doing everything online, to ordering online, will spending habits have changed? And that's something, as Jim said, he doesn't expect us to get back to normal until next fall of 2021. It might even be later than that. We're just going to have to wait and see. But I think tribes are ready through this pandemic and all they've done. I think they're ready to take these challenges head on.
And with that, Jason, too, and consumers, activity and what they've gotten used to as well, and everything with what's going on with the pandemic says don't gather. And at these places, it is about gathering. And what are your thoughts on that? How it will change consumer habits if everyone's gotten used to isolating? And I think this is something that probably in all entertainment industry are going to feel and have these questions. Any thoughts or takes? Go ahead, Jason.
Again, I think for a lot of our casinos, given that they were the central entertainment, venue in their respective county on the reservation, I still think it'll be that gathering place for the local community. The question is, across the country, the average gambler is definitely tends to be older, well over 55. So will those older customers come back? Are they still going to be, you know, willing to come down and do resume the way their life was before? And then also, how does a casino reach newer customers? Because now our older customers, you know, to your point, they just went through a pandemic. Maybe they've realized now spending 6 hours at a casino could be better spent with more time at home or more time with the family. I hope not. There's a balance there for sure. And I think as an entertainment venue, the tribal casinos can continue to be that gathering place.
And part of that, too, are conferences. I know that's a part of it, too. Maybe people say, no, I don't do casino, but then you have a conference that's there at one of them. No, we didn't bring that up. Any thoughts on that, Jason?
I think there's a lot of pent-up demand for conferences and for those bigger shows, both from the consumer side, but also from the business side. These businesses have a lot of product that has been backed up. The pipeline's backed up. They have a lot of product they want to get out there and get shown. I think that will come back fairly strongly. And at least we hope. At National Indian Gaming Association, we get most of our money from our conference activity. So, and it's our only way to get out into Indian country and to find out what's really going on the ground. So, but I think there's a lot of pent-up demand for that, and you should see that rebound fairly quickly.
Well, thank you for that. Jason Giles, also here too, is Chairman Greg Saris. And Chairman, any final thoughts?
Yeah, again, what Brian said, we're optimistic. It's been very difficult, but again, we've worked well with the community. And I think that people will continue to gather. Yes, something that the gaming industry has been dealing with is the aging population. But I think for us, because we've been so strong with about the health measures, and if casinos are strong, these elders, these people over 55 have felt safe coming here because they see when they see the measures that you go to protect them and to stay safe, they feel safe and they come. In fact, we've had, we've had lines because we're open on a limited capacity. Friday, Saturday, Sundays, we have lines where people will stand in line for an hour just to get in, one out. So I think, again, once we lift this and we get things, the COVID under control, as was indicated in the fall, let's say fall of next fall, 2021, winter 22, when we get closer there, I don't see a problem with people coming back and gathering. I don't anticipate it. I think people will feel more free. Again, my last word is that the reservations of the tribes work closely to the best of their ability with local and state officials. I think we can get through this, and we will. And I think we're leading the way, in fact, in so many ways in terms of health measures and providing examples of what works.
Well, Chairman Greg Saris with us today with the Federated Indians of Greaton Rancheria. Thank you for joining us today. And that's going to wrap up our conversation here on Native America Calling. Thank you to everybody we heard from, including Jason Giles from the National Indian Gaming Association, Brian Parrish with the Navajo Nation Gaming Enterprise, as well as Jim Claus joining us too. And so there is, you know, one perspective on what all the impacts are. Well, several perspectives. And if there is more you'd like to say about how the pandemic has impacted the gaming industry, your tribal casino, you can always reach out. You can send us an email, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And we hope you'll join us again tomorrow. We are back with a conversation about the Dakota 38. We'll learn a little bit about the history and hear from those who are descendants. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Megwa and Webieg, Gogwejum Gidinaway Maganag in a Munji Owad, Gishbin Gikendaman in a Munji Owad, Nawaj Deweni Panad, and Akunagayan Yowaj Jagain the Gunawain Dagusian. Gunojeno Kid in a Shinabe Akwazi Wagamigung, Nawaj Jigikendaman, Mawadishiwain healthcare.gov, Gamaganoj 1-800-318-2596. Gaundinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.